This is Within the Realm, and I'm Steve Garrett. Today we're going to talk a little bit about some things you probably didn't know about Arizona and my grandmother's apple butter. Those are two different stories, but let's go ahead and get started. Arizona, the last of the contiguous lower 48. Before it became a state in 1912, it was Arizona Territory. Certain images come to mind when we think of Arizona Territory. Tombstone, Doc Holliday, the OK Corral, prospectors, and dusty saloons. This well-known imagery comes from the second Arizona Territory. Beginning in 1862, there was a Confederate Territory of Arizona, whose government existed longer outside of the boundaries of the territory than it did within. Here's the story. Prior to the Civil War, the area we now know as the states of New Mexico and Arizona were one territory, the New Mexico Territory, with its capital in Santa Fe. Many in the southern portions of the territory wanted to separate and govern themselves. They cited the distance from the capital and the inability of the government at Santa Fe to respond to immediate needs as their reason for wanting the separation. Twice they attempted to establish an Arizona Territory, but the notion was rejected in Washington. This proposed Arizona suggested to split the New Mexico Territory in half, not with a north and south boundary like we know now, but rather east and west at the 34th parallel line. At the outbreak of the Civil War, most of the United States troops were recalled east, and the Butterfield Overland Stage and Mail Company was discontinued, leaving those hardy southwestern pioneers mostly on their own. By March of 1861, secession conventions had been held in Mesilla and Tucson to join the proposed territory to the Confederacy. A territorial militia was also organized at the time. In July 1861, Lieutenant Colonel John Baylor led a battalion of Texas Mounted Rifles into the would-be Confederate territory. He turned back an attack of Union troops stationed at Fort Fillmore in the First Battle of Mesilla. After this victory, Baylor established the territory of Arizona in the name of the Confederacy, placing himself in the office of governor and among his cabinet a local attorney, Marcus McWillie, as attorney general. The occupation of Mesilla and the organization of Arizona for the Confederacy was merely the beginning of the plan for the war in the Southwest. The plan, devised with the approval of rebel President Jefferson Davis, called for an invasion of United States territory following the Rio Grande North to seize the gold-rich Colorado Territory, and then Fort Laramie, the most important U.S. garrison on the Oregon Trail. From there, the attack would turn west towards the mineral-rich Nevada and California, seizing this source of treasure for the South. While this campaign was being organized, the Confederate Congress adopted the new provisional territory as their own in January of 1862. By act of President Davis, on February 14, 1862, Arizona was declared a territory of the Confederacy. Baylor was replaced as governor by Dr. Lewis Owings, the man originally selected for the post by the members of the secession conventions. Arizona was allowed a delegate to the Confederate Congress. The position went to Attorney McWillie of Mesilla. The campaign to conquer the West went in favor of the rebels for the first several weeks, but soon turned into a hasty retreat down the Rio Grande back to El Paso by late spring of 1862. But not all of the action was in the Rio Grande Valley. A unit of Arizona Rangers had been organized to respond to Indian attack or Union invasion in the westernmost parts of the territory. The Union did invade from the west. The California Column started east from Yuma once they were aware of the Confederate invasion. On March 30, 1862, a detachment of Company A of the Arizona Rangers, on a mission to destroy supply depots for the advancing Yankees, met a Union force at Stanwix's Station, 80 miles east of Fort Yuma. This skirmish, known as the Battle of Stanwix Station, was the westernmost engagement of regular forces in the Civil War. There was only one casualty in the battle. A Union private was wounded. He later recovered. The raid at Stanwix Station and five other storehouses by the Arizona Rangers successfully delayed the advance of the California forces. The Rangers were able to defeat a vanguard of the column at the Battle of Picacho Pass. After their victory, the Confederates watched the California cavalry retreat. Then they fell back to Tucson to warn the garrison there of the approaching Union army. These actions by the Arizona Rangers delayed the advance of the California column for over a month, which probably saved the Confederate Army of New Mexico from being intercepted and destroyed as they retreated back to Mesilla following the defeat at the Battle of Glorieta Pass. Despite the Rangers' success in harassing the Union troops advancing from California, the Confederates were pushed out of the territory. Governor Owings left Mesilla ahead of the Union occupation and served as the head of a government in exile located in San Antonio for the rest of the war. Delegate McWillie continued to serve in the Confederate Congress despite his territory being fully in the hands of the Union. A few Arizona units remained with the rebel army and saw service in battles in Texas, Louisiana, and Arkansas until the end of the conflict, and they were known as the Arizona Scout Company. Later in the war, Abraham Lincoln established his own Arizona territory, this one with the now familiar north and south boundary with New Mexico. It remained so for the next five decades. Arizona was finally admitted to the Union as a state on February 14, 1912, exactly 50 years after Jefferson Davis established it as the Confederacy's lone western territory. When I was a kid, I was lucky. I had a grandmother who loved me and was a great cook. She was a grandmother, not a grandma or a granny, grandmother. It was the only formal thing about her. Like I said, she was a great cook. She cooked from scratch. A pinch here, a dash there, no measuring cups or spoons for her. She would fetch out the right number of fistfuls of flour from the sack on whatever delicacy she was working on at the time. She had four kids, two sons and two daughters. Both daughters were home ec teachers. If you don't know what that is, ask your mom. She'll know. As grandmother got older, there was real worry about her recipes would be lost because they weren't written down. They were simply in her mind. So one day, the two home ec teachers and my grandmother decided that they would spend the rest of the day working on some of these recipes to get it down just right. So as she put her hand in the flour, bringing out the right number of fistfuls of flour, they would measure that. And they would come up with 13/38 of a cup or some sort of number like that. Something that was really hard to follow. After a while, writing down the recipes was abandoned. My favorite thing she made was apple butter. It was just perfect. Just perfect. Several months after her death, I complained that I had lost the apple butter that I loved forever. The oldest girl, my Aunt Bobby, said I needed to go down to the store and find a brand that I liked, because indeed, the apple butter was gone forever. Luckily, I did find another lady in town that made apple butter very much like my grandmother. I will eternally be in the debt of Mrs. Baird. But back to the apple butter. Many months after my grandmother passed away, my brother was out visiting my granddad and found a jar, the last jar, of her apple butter out in the well house. He took it home and cherished it for a long time. It was the last connection to her and her kitchen. He says that one night in a dream, he found himself in grandmother's kitchen, and she turned to him and said, "Well, don't you like my apple butter?" To which he replied, "I love it. What are you talking about?" And she said, "Well, you haven't eaten it yet." Well, the next morning, he got up and made a batch of biscuits and started in on that jar. And I think that's the way it was supposed to be. She had made that for us to enjoy. After all, there's not a measuring cup big enough to contain all the love that she put into everything she ever gave us grandkids. So that's this week's installment of Within the Realm. I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you found out something you didn't know today. If you want to know more about our podcast or just leave a message, check out our Facebook page, Within the Realm. I'll see if I can't get a link to Mrs. Baird's apple butter on there. And as always, thanks for listening.